welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all the stuff that's gone on in Apple, and there's been some fair bit of news this week. There could be some good discussions taking place. Now, once in a while, I'm crap with bookings. I haven't even booked any guests for the big show later, and I forgot, so that's how bad I am. But once in a while, I get together a panel that is just... There you go. So on next week's show...
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
No. This week, we got a great panel. Absolutely awesome panel. Starting us off, top left, Steve Sandy.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
Back with the Cylon audio.
I'm awesome.
Good man. How's the weather in there? Is it bright and sunny?
Yes, it is, sir. We had snow the other day, and it all melted, and I think it's supposed to be 72 tomorrow for the season opener of our local baseball team. So, yay. And I'm going to be there, of course.
Who's that going to be? Who's your baseball team?
I'm sorry?
Who is your
baseball team? Colorado Rockies.
Rockies, right, okay. Are they major or minor?
Major.
Majors, right, okay.
Well, they play like minor, but they are major.
Next to him, joining us for the first time in bloody ages, Tom Merritt.
Hello, hello, hello.
I hope you've got a note from Eileen, mate, as to where you've been.
I did, actually. She let me downstairs early in the morning for once.
With a packed lunch. She's let you come on the British show, but only if you promise to stay safe.
A box lunch, yeah.
What the hell have you been up to?
Ah, man, I've been kicking away with Daily Tech News Show and Daily Tech Headlines and all the other ridiculous number of podcasts I do, and I got a novel out.
I saw, yeah, Pilot X.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going well. It's getting good reviews and selling. So, yeah, I've got a copy right here if you want to see it. Love that cover, too. Yeah.
Pilot X. I intend to buy it and give it to Sharon to read. Don't take that personally. It's because I gave you the last book that you sent me. I got that on Amazon Kindle and I gave it to her to read. And she said, yeah, it was good.
Uh-huh. You're outsourcing. You're delegating. That's smart.
I'm a dyslexic, mate. Reading's painful. I just can't.
I got it.
A book's hard. One of my customers lent me Chris Evans' book to read, and I ended up downloading the audio to listen to it because I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't
read. Well, you can get Pilot X on audio too.
I'll be doing that then. Are you reading it? Have you got it on Audible? Are you reading it?
Yeah, and it's not me reading it. It's Kevin T. Collins, who's done a bunch of really good books. He's great.
Well, how's his voice better than yours? I don't get that.
Well, part of it is there are fans of Kevin T. Collins out there, so people who might not pick up my book with my name on it might pick up his reading.
Got you. Okay, that sounds logical. Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Beneath him, Chuck Joyner. Oh, wrong one. Hello, mate. I clicked the wrong button.
How are you, Ewan? Good to see you.
I've had better weeks. The best stressed man in podcasting is here. What you been up to, pal?
Just staying busy, just like Tom. It just seems like there's a lot of news and a lot of stuff you want to cover.
Now, before the pre-show, you and Don were saying that you were going to go to NAB.
Yes, we're both going.
Now, that's the kind of show I think I should go to, but I'm too scared to go in case it's shit.
It's not. It's like this fantastic toy store, especially for all of us.
See, that's the other reason.
Audio and video stuff, and so come on over. It's still plenty of time.
If I didn't have a return ticket, I wouldn't have enough money to buy one. I think at the end of that show, that's the thing that bothers me.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, and last but by no means least, the godfather of Mac, Don McAllister. Da Don.
Hello.
How you doing,
hello,
mate?
Hello, hello, hello. I'm fine, thank you, Ewan. Nice to be back again. It's been a while for me as well. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's been ages. It's not because I haven't invited you. It's just because I'm crap. I'm bloody awful doing the bookings. We're going to solve that today. So Muller's going to take over doing the bookings because he's got time for a start because he's retired. But also he's probably got some organisation in his body, which I haven't got a single thing. The week in Apple, we can't start with anything else. Mac Pro. We've all been bitching and moaning about how the pros are getting left behind, and there's a significant enough upgrade of 8 cores to the new Mac Pro model with a tumbling price line as well as, and there's been a whole pile of stuff which is really un-Apple. I want to know what Apple's done. They've announced a kind of roadmap. They've said that the screens come in and that there's a new Mac Pro redesign coming and iMac's coming, and that's just not Apple. And they've apologized as well. Discuss. Right, I'll get another beer. Give you a shout when you're done. Oh, anyone going to start us off? Because, I mean, do you want to talk about the aesthetics of the fact that Apple's decided to apologize and publish a roadmap? Because I just think that is out of this. It's like I've woken up in a different reality.
They just never, ever, ever apologize for anything. And I don't know. My feeling with the Mac Pro, the 2013 Mac Pro, is that it was always somewhat hamstrung by the fact that it was in this Johnny Ive case. Everything was about design. They really need to get it back to functionality for whatever the new model happens to be. But it was really a good thing to hear this from several of the Apple executives, Phil Schiller and Federighi and whoever else was in there, just to hear that, yeah, we're not giving up on the pro market. And you know, it's a wonderful thing to hear. So long time in coming.
Good. Steve, do you want to come in on line three and see if that's any better for your audio? Because it is chopping up a bit there.
Sure.
Don?
Yeah, I think they had to, really. I think there's been so much moaning and bitching about Mac Pro and no visibility of what the future direction was. I think their hand was forced. They probably didn't want to do this. In an ideal world, they probably would have wanted to have the new Mac Pro ready and available. But it sounds as though they are really going back to basics and redesigning it from scratch, and that's going to take a while. So they would have had to stem the flood of discontent with the pro users and just come clean. And I'm sure it was a hard won battle inside Apple. I'm sure they didn't do it lightly. But I think they've done the right thing. They've just sort of dangled a carrot out to all those Mac Pro users, and we've got something to look forward to now, which is good.
Tom, any thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like it's almost a change of mind. And I don't have any inside knowledge of that, but I have been interpreting all of their messaging and all of their decisions to be, we don't feel like it's worth going after that super pro market anymore. So we're going to do machines and apps that appeal to a more mainstream audience. And if that leaves some of the high-end users behind, well, we're sorry. This feels like they changed their mind and said, well, crap. We feel like maybe we miscalculated. We do need that high-end market for various reasons, maybe because they're trendsetters and influencers. And so because of that, we need to sit down and change that message. And they never used the word mistake, right? It's still Apple, almost trying to make you believe that this was the plan all along. But yeah, it is such a departure from their usual approach when they say, we're going to recommit, as if they admit that they hadn't been committed. So I think they changed their minds about that high-end market, and now they're trying to scramble to play catch-up.
Chuck, your thoughts?
I think that they maybe underestimated the vehemence with which the pro users and the higher-end users would get about this. And then all of a sudden, I think it migrated down, and there were the Mac is dead stories, or the Mac is not going to be upgraded, or where we're going to be is where we're going to stay. And I feel like that's when maybe it changed, that maybe they had to take a hard look at this and say, wow, we really miscalculated, because these people are very vocal and it's spilling over into everything else. No matter how great an iPhone or iPad we make, these people still want Macs, and they're talking a lot about it, and they're not saying nice things. We have to do something.
F. Hanshaw in the chat room is saying, Craig and Phil deserve a cookie.
Poor guys.
So here's we did have a conversation briefly in the Slack room between a few of us about, is the Mac Pro crap? and I've got to say, I don't think it is. And here's what I'm thinking is, So you get all the people that write reviews about Macs probably don't own a Mac Pro and don't use it day in, day out because of the fact they probably run it off a MacBook Pro at best because that's all they need to do their blogging bit and their reviewing bit. So they're just reviewing tech specs. They might have had one for a week as a review unit, perhaps, or had a go on someone's, perhaps. But I've got a 6-core Mac Pro that sat over there that I bought a year and a half ago, and it flies. It absolutely churns through video day in, day out. I reckon it saves me sometimes up to half a day on a project with the speed that it does video. My old MacBook Pro was the top-end MacBook Pro that I could buy, and it's at least twice as fast at doing video processing as that is, if not more. I wouldn't do without this machine. It cuts through 1080 and 4K video like everything used to when it was you know, high end with graphics and stuff. Okay, I can't change the graphics card, but I can change the RAM if I want, and I can change the hard drive if I want. So that's it. What more do I need? It's so quiet that I can have it on the corner of my desk here and I can still record audio for a voiceover. And it's so good at the heatsink process that it doesn't change the room temperature, which I love Don McAllister for eternity because he gave me the cheese grater down here that does the screens here and used to do the shows. But John, that changes the room temperature.
Yeah. Oh,
as
yeah.
soon as you stick that on, it's like, oh, jumpers off.
Oh,
I don't get this Mac Pro's crap. It looks beautiful. It keeps cool. It hardly makes a sound. And it crunches through stuff like there's no tomorrow. What is it that people don't think is pro about it? I can't get this. It threw me out. I cannot get this.
Well, you and I'm with you. There are two, but of course, there are two things. First of all, the internal hard drive question, which I frankly don't get because my primary production machine is a MacBook Pro because of the portability. So I'm forever plugging in and out storage. And that's just not, I guess that's me, and that's maybe not what a lot of pros do. But there was the PCI expansion card thing. And I've always been surprised that they didn't bring out something in the way of a breakout box or something with a fast interface that would try to address some of that. I think the last time we were here, or I was here, that someone pointed out that there was somebody that made it, but it wasn't Apple. It was a third-party solution. And that one seems to be the one that was the deal breaker for so many people that just, they didn't even look at the thing because they couldn't put those drives in and have, you know, 10 drives or 5 drives or whatever you can put in the cheese grater, and they could not swap PCI cards in and out. They could not add all the interfaces they wanted. And so I'm with you. I think they looked at the reviews. They maybe had their hands on these, but I'm not sure they gave it a fair chance. But it's pretty much after the fact now.
It is stupid to say that the Mac Pro is crap. It's not crap. It's a very good machine, as Ewan just laid out the case for. But Apple themselves point out that because they did that pyramid design and they bet on separate cores and the industry didn't follow them, it doesn't work for some people. And some of those people are very high-end users doing super sophisticated stuff, but Apple seems to want to get those people back. So yeah, it's not crap, but it also kind of undershot what they used to do with the old Mac Pros, which you can still, you know, put an NVIDIA card. I mean, there's that new, what is it, the Titan XP out today that NVIDIA is shipping with the Mac drivers for the Pascal generation NVIDIA cards. You could put that in an older Mac Pro and outperform the Mac Pro in some respects. And you can't do that as easily with the Mac Pro now, the 2013 Mac Pro, because you have to put it in a box and put it on the extension and run it through Thunderbolt. All of that doesn't make the current Mac Pro a bad machine, but Apple itself is saying it just didn't work for as many people as we want it to now. I just assumed Apple was like, you know what, those super high-end people doing 3D rendering and everything, we're fine not having them. So now they've changed their mind. Maybe it has to do with VR. Maybe it has to do with a VR product coming from Apple, and they want to have a machine capable of authoring things for VR on Mac.
You really think Oculus Rift have scared them?
I don't think they've scared them. Well, I think Apple has a VR product that they want to put out.
Well, Oculus have said they won't do a Mac version because Apple haven't got a machine that's high-end enough.
Yeah, it's not just the machine, though, is it? I think it is specifically the GPU side of things. I mean, I'm no great expert on the GPU side of things, but my reading of the briefing that they had was they had a bet on this dual GPU architecture, and they thought that was the way the industry was going to go, and the industry didn't go that way. They went to a super scalable, larger GPU, which the design of the three-sided triangle, as Tom said before, just couldn't accommodate higher performance GPUs on one side, so that just one side would get super, super hot. So and presumably once they realized that, they then thought, well, there's, you know, we can't actually upgrade this small tube. So, you know, let's not upgrade it to USB-C and stick Thunderbolt 3 in it, et cetera. We've got to go a different direction. And I think it's taken them longer than it should have done to realize that. And to then make the decision, you know, the internal decision, right, okay, this isn't working, we've got to go a different direction. They've made that decision too late, and consequently now they couldn't wait for the standard production cycle of, you know, 18 months to actually produce the machine without saying anything, so they've had to do this briefing. But yeah, I think it probably is. I think the VR side of things has got a big influence on it as well, because as I understand, you know, the current Mac Pro, you can't really do VR development or use it as a VR machine anyway. And that's obviously a big thing in the future. And they've got to be able to, you know, have at least one or two machines in the lineup that can accommodate that. I'm a Mac Pro user. I've got a 6-core Mac Pro 2013. Sits on my desk. It's fine. Does everything I want it to do at the minute. But, you know, and I think the main problem as well is that even if the machine is good, the fact that they haven't updated it in such a long time just gives you a feeling of a lack of confidence on the direction of, you know, where they're going. So even though it's a great machine now, the fact that they haven't updated it for goodness knows how many years, and there was no sign of actually it getting updated to USB-C and Thunderbolt 3, etc., it just made people feel very, very unsure of the direction. So they, you know, hence they've had to come out with this new plan and this unprecedented way of announcing it as well.
Yeah. Steve, yeah. Anything to come back on? Steve, Andy, anyone?
I'm sorry.
Did you want to say anything there? You look like you wanted to say something.
I can barely hear you there. Oh, I was just going to, you know, I'm hoping you get to the my favorite machine, the iMac, because...
Go for it, mate. Lead us off on the iMac.
I'll lead you off on the iMac. You know, I was really thrilled to hear that we're going to see new iMac models later this year because as much as I love my 27-inch 5K Retina display iMac, I do run into situations where I can feel like it's really struggling to do certain things. You know, we need Thunderbolt 3 on this. I'm saying that. I think we need Thunderbolt 3. We need USB-C. We need to get all of those wonderful things that can actually... Oh, did I just fall off here?
That's me, mate. Carry on.
Oh, okay.
Mate, there's an assumption you need to make, right? If anything's not going well, it's me.
What's that?
You make an assumption. If anything's not going well, it's me. Don't ever assume it's you, because it's 99% of the time it's not. It's got to be me.
By the way, I'm going to make an ad here for another service that just beats Skype all to death, and that's Zoom. We've been using Zoom for a video show and absolutely rocks compared to Skype. But anyway, not saying anything bad about Skype, but I love Zoom. Anyway, getting back to the iMac, I'm just going to be thrilled to see what is coming out later this year. You know, this machine is 2 years old. I'm usually on a 3-year refresh cycle. I can't wait to see what they've got because I think I'll probably jump on it, man.
Good, man. Anyone else? I mean, you use an iMac as well, don't you, Chip?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking to you on now. And, you know, it's... Well, I didn't just get it because it's now a little bit long in the tooth. But I'm going to be particularly interested in see what they think they can do to an iMac to make it desirable to professionals, or at least some level of professional. Are they going to open up the ability to add RAM? Are they going to open up the ability to swap hard drives? Or is it just going to be more ports? you know, that was sort of the intimation that, okay, this might be the stopgap. You know, you might be able to get an iMac that would suit your needs. And unless they've changed some of the fundamentals of iMac design with it being such a closed system, it's just going to be interesting to see what they can do to target it to that audience.
I mean,
I wonder if what they do is take that modularity through Thunderbolt that they thought was going to work on the Mac Pro and apply that to the iMac instead.
You mean with a breakout box, Tom?
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
That would be cool.
In its current form factor, the iMac isn't going to be user serviceable in the slightest, is it? So there's got to be a form factor change.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to change the form factor because it's such an iconic design. But I think what they have seen is that, and they intimated about this in the briefing, is that the pro user has split. You know, you've got high-end designers, high-end photographers, but then you've got a high-end cinematographers and high-end VR people and high-end, you know, 3D rendering people. So a decently specced iMac is probably great for someone who's a pro in certain industries, whereas other industries, you know, need that extra level of performance that, you know, a standard graphics designer probably doesn't need. So they probably thought that they could make the iMac be everything to everyone and have now realized they can't. So hence they need the top-end Mac Pro to deal with, you know, the super high-end processing power that some people need.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, though, in terms of the serviceability, my understanding is the only way into the iMac is at the moment is through the screen, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. I think you can change the RAM on some of them, can't you, through
on
a
the
panel.
Back side.
Yeah, yeah. The 27-inch models have a little door that's basically centered in the back, and you could just pop it out. It's actually very, very easy to slip new RAM in there or
that route.
Improve. What's that?
There's no major components through that route.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other thing that I think ties into the change in direction maybe a little bit with the iMac and the Mac Pro is whether Thunderbolt has really got the grasp that Apple hoped it would. Because, I mean, I don't know any products that didn't function well with Thunderbolt, so I can't see why that hasn't been a reason for it to take hold. It's certainly something that I mean, I know it's Apple and Intel's proprietary technology, so maybe it's a cost thing to Windows machines that you said, you know what, stuff you were going USB 3 just to stick two fingers up to Apple. But, I mean, is this the death knell of Thunderbolt, or are they going to persist with Thunderbolt in these machines? Or is Thunderbolt integral to the movement of these machines?
I sort of assume they're going to keep merging Thunderbolt and USB-C along and see if they can't just, you know, ride that transition a little bit.
Right. So you don't think they're going to, it's a suck it and see process at the moment for them. So it could go either way.
Yeah. Well, look at the MacBook Pro, right? It's all USB-C ports. So I think they'll continue to support Thunderbolt, but they'll make it so that you don't have to use Thunderbolt necessarily.
Right. Okay.
And it may be a little early to phase out Thunderbolt from the pro level machines, even though we're talking about a long delay for the Mac Pros.
They don't care about changing the port configuration because they can sell you a dongle, but they don't want to stop supporting it.
Yeah.
One of the things I liked about the Mac, you know, the current Mac Pro is the six Thunderbolt ports on it, because I found that really, really useful.
Yeah.
You know, I've got multiple drives hanging off it. You know, I can plug different monitors into it, multi-monitor setups. So having the six Thunderbolt ports on the current Mac Pro is great. And I can't really see them doing anything else other than swapping over to six USB-C ports or with Thunderbolt 3. I mean, that's going to be super extendable then, or even more than six ports, you know, on the back of it. And of course, you know, we are talking about the current Mac Pro has only got Thunderbolt 2. Thunderbolt 3 is an extra level of performance, an extra level of functionality. You can do so much more with Thunderbolt 3. You've got the increase in the bandwidth. You can drive everything through a single cable to, audio, video, and everything on a monitor. So they're certainly not going to give up Thunderbolt 3, but as we've seen with USB-C, you can have Thunderbolt 3 and USB 3 off the same port. So they just chuck a shed load of ports at the new Mac Pro, and extendability is fine, or should be fine.
I tell you what, man, I'm looking forward to this USB-C world. I know we're not there yet, and the dongles do make a lot of things difficult, but I have a Nexus and a Pixel C, and they use USB-C, and it's so nice to just have one charger in every room for those. And it just, it plugs into everything. It's going to be good. It's just a little early.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, I've got a USB-C on the GoPro 5 that I bought to try. And I'm really impressed with it as a connector. I think it's brilliant. It's really solid. It's, you don't seem to feel as worried about it flexing or bending or anything like that. It doesn't feel brittle or light. But that's the issue we've always had, though, with connectors. Is as connectors have evolved, they've changed. USB has been the only thing that's kept the plug and spade connector that's given you any consistency. And I accept that it evolves for the purposes of technology and getting faster, more bandwidth, etc., that kind of stuff. But are we ever going to get to a Star Trek level of connector, you know, where one fits all, one, everyone follows the same format, everyone goes to the free open standard, you know, is there an HTML5 of connectivity, in inverted commas,
or is there a wireless standard where we don't even need the ports anymore, in that far-flung future you're imagining?
Wireless is great, but it's still not fast enough. I can't transfer files wirelessly. I moved 100 gig today from, I got Western Digital Thunderbolt drives down here, and I plug those into the back of the Mac, and I just work off those, and then I duplicate and back those up using ChronoSync, and I've just done 100 gig in 4 minutes today. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, and that's my other question, is USB-C going to do 100 gig in 4 minutes? Because I don't think it does at the moment. It's not going to get close to that, is it?
Did you see Western Digital has new solid state external drives, the My Passport SSD line?
Oh, and how much?
$100 for 256 gigs, $200 and $400 for the 512 and terabyte.
That's $400 for the terabyte. That's not horrific.
It's not awful, yeah. No. And they're USB-C.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good. I used to stay at a hotel in London regularly when I was doing work at Heathrow, and there was a guy I used to bump into in the bar and got chatting, and he worked for a firm that made SSDs, but they were 9 terabyte SSDs. He was telling me some of the I can tell you some stuff that I'd probably end up getting shot for, but he was saying that they're like £25,000 for a 9 terabyte SSD. Wow. And they store ridiculous amounts of data.
Like I'm sure they've come down to £10,000 by the
end. Yeah, exactly. No, but these things are like they use them for databases that track aircraft parts and mileages and that kind of stuff, and it's just like unbelievable. Is this a change in Apple, or is this just a one-off? Has someone gone, do you know what? You're close to losing the pro market here. Say something and then stum up, and we'll reevaluate. Or is this going to be? There can't be a roadmap for every product with Apple, because that's just too alien.
No, this is a one-off. It must be. This is a unique set of circumstances whereby they're cocked up, and they've got to recover from it. They can't recover in time to produce a product. They would love to just not say anything for the next 3 months, go to WWDC and say, we didn't screw up the last Mac Pro, but here's a brand new one. And they can't do it. They've got till next year before they can release a new Mac Pro. So I'm afraid that they're going to have to eat some humble pie. And the cleanest way to do it is just to have this briefing, get it all out in the open, and it's done. But you'll never see them do this with the iPad or the iPhone unless they screw up on the iPad and the iPhone. But, you know, in the normal course of events, no, I personally think it's just a one-off.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's a change in that they did it, but I wouldn't expect it to become a regular thing either.
Yeah. What's
really going to be interesting is to see what the competition does, because now Apple has said we're back into it. We're back focusing on the pros, and so what are the other makers going to do to woo the pros before that happens? I think that's going to be really interesting.
Chuck, I've got to say, mate, you're leading a charmed life, because most people, when their video freezes, it freezes on a really awful face. But you're actually frozen there on a quite a decent look, really, for you, mate. I'd get that captured.
You can use that as a headshot. That's good.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, send that to me.
Most people are pulling their O face, mate. It's not good.
I have to say, though, that although...
It's too bad you can't animate it. Just have his jaw move up and down.
Okay, give me a bit of time.
little clutch cargo.
Now, although this event has been a one-off, and I don't think we'll see it again in this sort of context, The executives are sort of loosening up a little bit. And we've seen the 2 years on the run now at WWDC, John Gruber's interview with, you know, the leading guys in Apple. And that's, in some respects, this briefing might have been a bit of a get-out clause for them, because if they hadn't have come clean on the Mac Pro, they would have been questioned about it at WWDC anyway by Gruber. So that might have been embarrassing for them. So this is a good get-out, a way for them to get away from that. And hopefully they'll still have the conversation at WWDC and perhaps expand on it a little bit more. But we have seen the past 2 years a little bit more openness. And I suppose, you know, so this briefing isn't completely alien to them, because they have loosened up a little bit. But again, I don't think we'll see a similar sort of roadmap ahead in so much. But again, they haven't really given as much detail. They've basically just laid out the sort of strategy for how they're going to cope with pro users in the future.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how it pans out, because it could go somewhere, it could not. Hanshaw in the chat room saying, nope, USB-C 3 is only, I think, maximum 10 gigabytes per second, and Thunderbolt 3 is 40. So it's not going to hit anywhere near on the same... Thunderbolt's probably one of the best connectivities out there at the moment.
Obviously. And don't forget, for pro users as well, the nice thing with Thunderbolt, especially Thunderbolt 3 with your 40 gigabits per second, is that you can have long leads. So if you have optical leads, you can actually have you can have your main machine in the, you know, in your production suite, and run a 100-meter cable to a machine room somewhere where you've got all your, you know, solid state hard drives and, you know, fast arrays of stuff. So Thunderbolt 3 is a great technology for a pro user, especially if you want to get all your external gear away from the production environment. You know,
I love it. Mm-hmm. We've got me FireWire sound card goes to a dongle. That's the only concession I've got, if you like, to it all. But the rest of it, I love my Mac Pro. Love. I'm hoping it's going to last me for sort of 4 or 5 years, but we'll see. Apple signs deal with Samsung for 92 million OLED iPhone panels. I didn't think that sounded a lot. Am I just kidding myself?
Well, this is not an announcement from Samsung or Apple, so we don't know if the number's actually accurate. It could be just the first part of a multi-part order. Who knows?
Okay.
That'll cover the first weekend.
Yes, that's not very many.
I mean, it could also be just for one particular model of the iPhone as well.
Exactly, you know, yeah.
So it might just be the high-end iPhone, the 8 Plus or whatever, that has the OLED screen. So I wouldn't imagine they're going to swap all the screens of all the new iPhones that come out in September or whatever aren't going to be OLED.
Well, going back to the comment about Apple's roadmap, etc., one of the other problems I think they've got is that there is so many rumors going around about the iPhone 10-year edition versus 8 versus 7S that... I think they have to deal with that. Otherwise, I think they're going to see iPhone sales for the next one that's announced go really, really stale, because people are going, well, you know, there's a lot of rumors that actually you're in another month, you're going to release the 10-year edition, 8, whatever. So if you push a 7S out to me in September, I'm just going to hold fire and wait and see. And I think that could do them some real harm as well there. But this doesn't sound enough. I mean, I think the other thing is that Apple are getting to a point like car makers did. I think they're doing just in time. I think Tim's masterstroke is he's sitting back and going, do you know what? We're going to do just in time. So, you know, you've still got, Christ knows how many months on for the old Air. Oops, for the old AirPods. There's still stores getting two. You've got Regent Street getting two of these a day. There's something drastically wrong if Regent Street is getting two of these a day. Or it's a policy. We're just going to sell just enough. We're going to make sure we deliver just enough. We're not going to pre-order. We're going to get rid of warehousing entirely. No?
I think with the iPhone, they're in a strange place, especially with the new one coming up. Because, we know now when the iPhone is released. So presumably they know, or they've already assumed, or they can calculate the impact on, you know, sales between now and when the next iPhone is released. It mightn't have that much impact on sales. You know, it's probably only us Apple fans who really understand or look to the future as to what the iPhone is going to be when it's released. So, you know, they've got the set release cycle, so that shouldn't affect them. I think the biggest problem for them this year with the anniversary coming up is to set expectations. Because you're starting to see, well, we've seen some weird and wacky, suggestions of what might be from, you know, clear clear iPhones that you can see through for virtual and augmented reality to you know, all everything's got an OLED screen and removal of the home button. I mean, there's just so many rumors flying about that I think they probably will have to, in some way, set expectations for September. And they probably can't keep stum until then because, you know, Apple tends to under-deliver from what the current rule rota of rumors are. So that could be quite problematic for them this year because people are expecting so much from the next iPhone. So I think they will have to step in at some point and reset expectations, whether or not it's officially or, you know, via their usual channels of influences, etc.
Yeah. Is the underrun a deliberate move, do you think, to try and get people to perceive demand on a quality product, or do you think there's issues on manufacturing, issues in supply chain that are causing it?
You talk about the AirPods,
anything,
particularly?
Anything, because everything has been slow to deliver since the Apple Watch, hasn't it? And that's the Angela Arendt's advent of era. And one of her things would be to try and create an exclusive brand. You have to have exclusivity, as in it's very difficult to get hold of. And it seems to have come since Apple Watch. There's this, we're constantly under manufacturing. And I don't know whether it's, as I say, a design to get rid of warehousing. It's a process to create exclusivity or in the brand, or whether it's there is some serious issue somewhere in the supply chain that Apple cannot get a handle on. But that would have crept out for other users and other companies and other manufacturers, and there'd be a story that couldn't contain itself there. I don't know.
I tend to doubt that manufacturers want to have underruns to promote exclusivity. I know there are some cases where it's been true, but that's not a good long-term strategy. Not having enough products to sell to people who want them isn't really good for someone who makes most of their money off selling products. So I tend to think it's probably either like you're saying, a just-in-time strategy that they're fine-tuning, or maybe there's some supply chain problems and parts issues in there that they're, you know, they're hard negotiators. So maybe they're pressing some people because they're like, well, we could switch to another manufacturer.
And if you're doing this...
Yeah, just yesterday, I think they announced that there's a second manufacturer for Apple Watch that has been signed on. So at least we're seeing that they're looking at ramping up production of that, or at least having a second manufacturer in place. So in case demand for an Apple Watch 3 happens to get to the point that they are seeing a definite shortage of product, at least they can pull this other person on, or this other company online, and make sure that they've got enough for everybody.
Yeah. Chuck, you were saying?
Yeah, if you're doing this, I guess there's a little risk if you plan to go too far under. I'm with Tom on that. But at the same time, it's not, I don't think if you want to go out to get a pair of AirPods and they're not available, what are you going to do? You're probably going to wait. You know, you're not going to look across the aisle and say, well, gee, those are almost as good, or, you know, these are competitive, unless you're going on a trip and just absolutely have to have something like that. You're going to wait. I'm not saying that that's a good thing that Apple should do, but if you're looking at the supply chain thing and you're trying to fine-tune it, wouldn't you rather err just a little under instead of a little over and start having to pay all the warehousing costs and all of that?
Yeah, I'll buy that. It's a side effect. Exclusivity as a potential side effect that you can exploit versus the main part of the plan. And I think that happens a lot. And the other wrinkle in here is there are things like India where Apple is having to bring manufacturing into India in order to get India to allow them to set up retail shops. That complicates things because they can't just say, well, everything comes out of Hanhai. Now everything comes out of Foxconn and we can distribute it around the world. They have to put some allocation towards India to say, well, only those phones that we're going to sell in India can come out of the Indian market. So I don't know what kind of complexities that might introduce too.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with the exclusivity thing. I think if they wouldn't try and get exclusivity by withholding product, I think they would do it on price, you know, make them much higher. I mean, the AirPods as an example, although, you know, you might think they're quite expensive, £150 for a pair of AirPods, when you actually look at the technology in them and then you compare it to what else is available, know, they could have easily priced them, yeah, twice as much and tried to make them exclusive in that respect. But they don't want to do that. I think they want to get the, especially the AirPods, out to as many people as possible, because it's the next platform for Apple. It's the start of the wearable platform. I think the problems they probably have is, and if you look, the products they've had most problems with getting out to market, it's not been the laptops, etc. You know, they can normally ship them out either the same day as they announce them, or, you know, within a month or two. It's these little tiny devices. It's these miniaturized components that they really are working on to yeah, cram into the smallest place possible. And you've got to think that there's the technology to actually manufacture those is quite hard to produce. But then when you first launch a product like the AirPod, the yield rate must be so low. And especially with Apple, they can't put out a product that's going to break in 3 months. They can't put out a product that's going to be unreliable. They have to have a product that they can be assured is, you know, is going to last for, you know, 12, 24 months. Yeah. So to do that, they have to have strict and rigorous testing. They have to have the highest quality components. They have to be manufactured in the best possible way. So, you know, you're probably looking at yield rates of horrendous proportions. And of, you know, if you're making 1,000 AirPods and you know, half of those are actually going in the bin or having to go back to manufacturing, you're going to run into problems.
Good points. Apple Watch Series 3 is expected in second half of 2017. I mean, the upgrade cycle on the last one was about 18 months. This feels a bit quick, especially for the... I mean, everyone that I've said that knows what the one's like and has had the two has said the two is way snappier. It really functions. It does all the things that the one should have done. Does it seem strange that 3 is supposed to come this early? Because it feels a bit early to me, most definitely.
Depends on what the feature set is. Because there's so much demand for Wi-Fi connectivity or cellular connectivity that, you know, that might be it. If it's just a little bit faster processor, then, yeah, it's definitely going to be too soon. But to pass that judgment, you got to know what they're going to give you.
There was a rumor as well this week, wasn't there, about the 3 having a cellular card slot?
And I could, that would make sense then. If Series 3 is just, hey, Series 2 is still out there, it's still a great model, and now we've added another level, which is the Series 3, that would make sense to me. And something like LTE would be the right thing for that.
I don't see what you'd use it for, though.
Yeah, I can't see them using any sort of SIM slot. It would most likely just be something like the Apple SIM that you've got in the iPad Pro, and I'm trying to think if it's in any other product, but I don't think they'd want to go with an actual SIM slot in the device. I just keep wondering, too, if there would be any cannibalization of the iPhone line. You know, some people may say, well, I don't use my iPhone that much, except right now it's being used as a, interim device or connectivity device for my Apple Watch. You give that cellular connectivity, I'm not going to use my iPhone, or at least I'm not going to take it with me. I'll just use this device to make phone calls and, talk to Siri.
Good luck with talking to Siri, mate. Jeez.
Well, just now when I was saying Series 3, my Siri had got activated. So there you go.
Oh, God.
And can you imagine what the howls are going to be like if they do implement that strategy with the battery life on an iPhone, or pardon me, on an Apple Watch for phone calls and LTE consumption? Come on.
There has been discussion of possibly having... Yeah, there has been some discussion of having actual watch bands, Apple watch bands, that would have additional battery capacity built into them or some additional functionality. So that could be part of the change as well. Maybe they're saying, hey, you know, we understand that we still have a problem with battery life. What we're going to look at is having bands with some sort of flexible battery capability in them, give you a little or a lot more battery life. So
that's solid.
It's all speculation.
It wouldn't surprise me actually if the Series 3 came out sooner rather than later, because I think one of Apple's main goals and the product, the Apple Watch product, it isn't really, if they bring out a new model, I don't think they're really intending for current users to actually replace their current model. I think they they want to bring the Apple Watch out, and they want to see the current Apple Watches sort of move down a scale, so that, you know, you've got some people who will actually replace a Series 2 with a Series 3, then that Series 2 either gets resold to somebody or passed down to, you know, a sibling or a, you know, someone in the family. But then the price points of the Series 1 and the Series 2, they slide down. It becomes more affordable for more people. So, you know, they're constantly trying to grow the Apple Watch market. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if the Series 3 came out. As far as cannibalization of the iPhone is concerned, again, it's bound to be some cannibalization, but if there's one company that's never worried about cannibalization of their own products, it's Apple. But I think it must be a huge market of people who basically just can't afford an Apple phone. You know, iPhones are very expensive items. So if they can get people into the Apple ecosystem by providing them with a watch, if they can't purchase a phone, but they can get a watch with a SIM card in, and they can do, you know, 10% of the features of an iPhone, plus things that an iPhone can't do for you, it's a win-win as far as Apple would be concerned, I would think.
I think I don't know if they can make the Apple Watch price low enough to be that for someone who can't afford an iPhone, though. That's the question. Yeah.
Probably not at this particular level, but again, as they bring out more and, you know, all the products start to slide down the scale.
Eventually you're right. Will.
Yeah. I think the other thing is they've clearly decided that they're going to the medical area. They want to have a heavier influence on the medical situation and research kit. And also they've said that they're going into the sports field. So things like oxygen saturation and that kind of stuff, you'd see that there's new monitors coming out that could sample more, could look at the quality of your sweat, or, you know, what toxins there are in it, or that kind of stuff, or whether it, like I said, you know, oxygen saturation level is probably the next logical sensor to add, isn't it, after heartbeat? Liver function, which goes
obviously, as long as the needles come out of the back of it into your arm, that's all. That's
obviously, right. I'll be skipping the three then.
Unless they can improve your liver function with the Apple Watch.
As Muller hands me a Guinness on cue. passed me two through, and I'm sitting thinking, God, he's telepathic, and I've just realised he can see under my screen. See the glasses, everything. It's taken me a while. He's got two past me before that. Now, if you want Apple and you love your Apple stuff, then think about your eyes, because Hoya do Apple for your eyes. And this week I went out to the NEC and I met up with Mark and the guys at Hoya, and they showed me Uniku. I've been banging on and on and on and about this thing, and it's brilliant. So I went and I stood in front of the machine and I got my eyes measured. And then they put it through a computer, and Mark put in my prescription and all that kind of stuff. And then he said, pick a frame you like. So I picked a frame I like. He chose the frame on the thing. And then there it is. It's me wearing my new glasses, allegedly. It does a 3D render straight away with the glasses on that you've chosen. And the thing that's brilliant about this is it sets the lens in the correct position based on what it sees in the scan of your face. And then it builds the frames to fit your face and to fit the location of the lenses. And it will not, no matter how hard you try, it will not compromise the position of the lens. So the lenses are set for the optimal optical function with your eyes, and then the frames are built around it. And you say, okay, well, you know, I like frames a little bit wider. I want it wider on my head because I've got a big head. Then all you do is you pull the tabs on this and you increase the size of the frame, and it pulls it to the right length to fit your face. And then they send the file off to a place in Belgium who make the frames, and then the frames come back, they put the lenses in them, and they are glasses that are built for you. They go so far that they've even got your name on the inside of one of the stems. That's what this, and I watched the thing making the frames up, and it's basically a big pile of powder and a laser just dots all over it, firing as it goes through. And at the end of it, the woman reaches into this pile of power and shuffles it and pulls out a set of frames that have just been fired into this laser. By this laser into this powder, it's an incredible process. When John and the Hoya guys were here, with Mark a few weeks ago, he said that it's more like archaeology than it is 3D printing. And I totally got what he said when I saw the video. It definitely is. Please support Hoya. Please go and check out Uniku. Please send them an email to podcast@hoya.co.uk and ask them about Uniku and where they can get measured. There is one machine in the country at the moment. The next machine comes into Wrexham, I think, at the middle of this month. And we're going to go up and do a live type thing, do a periscope or something like that from there and capture some video as well of the whole process. But then my face has been measured already, but it's going to be measured again and my prescription's going to be done and I'll have a glasses 2 weeks later. You've got to go and check out Uniku. They're awesome. Please check out Hoya because they look after us. Please also check out UK2. They give us all the bandwidth. They give us the server. If you've been watching this crap for the last 8 years, then UK2 are the people that have allowed you to do that. So you need to send them some death threats. No, I mean, you need to send them the congratulations for putting up with this rubbish for so long. They're awesome. Please check them out. You get loads of stuff, VPS, VPN, domain names, hosting. There's tons of stuff that you can do with UK2. And you get a massive amount if you go to britishnetwork.com/sponsors, click on the UK2 bit, and it'll give you all the offer codes that can nearly clear your basket. Simple as that. They're awesome. Please check it out. Please support them. Right, chaps. Steve, has your cat finished climbing up your backdrop during the ads?
My cat is, anytime I'm talking and doing things like this, this particular cat wants to come up and join the show. And
so good.
He's really good about it. Generally, he doesn't knock over the backdrop, but I have gotten claws in my crotch before, which is not a good thing. So if you ever see me right in the middle of a podcast and I'm going, you know why.
There's your title.
Yeah, I was going to say, you invite all these people along, the panel of the year potentially, and we still come up with claws in my crotch as the title. Stuff highbrow. Right, Steve, have you got a cool thing for us? You're on mute.
Actually, I do. This is actually a combination of two products, I guess you could say. What it is this is from Logitech. This is the MK850 Performance. It's a, I'm not sure it's really Bluetooth. I believe it's, it can be Bluetooth, but you can also use their little dongle and plug it into one of your USB ports. This keyboard gets 3 years of life off of a set of AA batteries or AAA batteries. I can't recall which.
What?
Also comes with a nice little mouse that goes along with it. And it's probably one of the most comfortable keyboards I've run into lately. I don't know if you can see there, but there's a little bit of a curve to it. Also has a nice pad down at the bottom that just feels so good on your wrist when you're typing.
That was getting a bit adjustable, pervy there, Steve. Move on.
Two different angles. What's that?
The audio went a bit hangy there and it got a bit pervy for a while, but go on.
Anyway, absolutely a great little setup. I will send you, I don't have it right in front of me, the URL for that, but I will send you an address.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you. How the hell's it getting 3 years out of AA batteries?
I have no idea, but they're 3 years on that, and the mouse will run for 2 years on one cell. Absolutely amazing battery life.
That's alien technology.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
From Belgium, I think.
Belgium. Muller's enjoyed you because you've been like Max Headroom all day. Well done, mate. Good pick. Tom, what have you got for us, mate?
I've been having fun with the Anchor app on iOS. It's A-N-C-H-O-R. You can go to anchor.fm if you want to take a look at it on the web. It is basically another take on radio. So they do little bits, little, you know, quick hits. There's a Star Wars show on there. I've been doing Daily Tech headlines on there. Annie Gauss has some Silicon Valley headlines on there. Jeff Cannata, Scott Johnson. There's a ton of people using it. Justin Robert Young's doing some stuff on there about politics. And it's just fun to listen to because they're little quick bits. And if you're a podcast listener, it's a great way to find some more content from some of the folks you might like out there on it. And they just launched an interview studio function so that people can use the app to conduct interviews with folks and then put them out on their channels.
So how's it working? Is it just sampling from stuff that you've already done, or are you making something specific for it?
I mean, I started by just putting the Daily Tech Headlines show, which is less than five minutes in there. But I've stopped doing that, and I've started recording each headline individually, because what that does in the Anchor app is kind of fun. You can just swap through. If you're like, oh, I know that story, you can swipe and skip to the next one. And it just keeps playing all the stations that you favorited all the way through. So you can either lean back and listen to it, or you can interact with it. You can actually call in to stations on it, stuff like that.
That's kind of cool. I like
that. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Because we do a daily news show at 5 minutes. Kyle Swagger does it, of course, from the Philippines. So he could probably put the entire thing on there.
Well, yeah. And what I found is that I always do a read through of my script to look for spelling errors and stuff like that before I actually record. So I just started recording that in Anchor. And if I screw up, it's just one little bit. I don't have to restart the whole thing.
Oh, that's a great idea. I like that. That's a really good pick. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, you bet.
We shall put that in the Slack room and also in the there we go. It's in the British Tech Network Geek Shed chat room, the IRC. Don, what have you got for us, mate?
Right. Well, I've got an old faithful, actually, and it's not something new. It's something I've had it for years, but I've recently had a need to start using it again. It's a Mac application. It's called FlexTime. It's by Red Sweater Software. It's Daniel Jalkut's Red Sweater Software. And basically what it is it's a very simple Mac application, but it allows you to set up different timers. So currently I'm doing a bit of physio on my elbow. I've got tennis elbow at the minute, not through playing tennis. It should really be called iPad or iPhone elbow, I think. But I need to exercise, do like a 30-second stretch, and then wait for 15 seconds, then do another 30-second stretch, etc. And you can configure FlexTime to have multiple different timers. And then they'll just run concurrently, and they'll give you a little prompt at the end of each timer to go on to the next stage, etc. So it's really useful. I mean, if you're into this, is it the Pomodoro technique, whereby you work for 20 minutes and then you have a 10-minute break and another 20 minutes? You can do all those sorts of things with this little application. So it's very flexible. It's scriptable as well if you're into that sort of thing. But just as a repetitive timer with different time intervals, it's very straightforward to set up. It's for $10. It's over at Red Sweater, red-sweater.com/flextime. But I've had it for ages, bought it years ago, but I just use it now and again, and this is a great use for it.
Excellent. Is it watch compatible?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. No, it's. I think it's just a Mac app at the moment. It's fairly old, but it needs OS 10, 10.10 or higher. It's probably one that Daniel doesn't work on very much because it does what it's supposed to do, so. Good.
Yeah, no, if it works, it works, as long as it keeps ticking in, excuse the pun. Chuck, what have you got for us, mate?
Yeah, I've got, I need to explain the use case, I guess. Some of your listeners and viewers probably know that a little while ago, Transporter, which used to live right over my shoulder back there, is no longer there. They end-of-lifed their product. Yeah. And so I found myself with a whole lot of, well, three or four 2.5 inch drives and really no way to effectively use them. So I went and got a number of these little Inatec drive cases. They're very cheap. They're like $10. They slide open so that the drive can be dropped in very easily and then, you know, slide shut, lock in, and, you know, you've got your drive. It also comes in a white, which is not the important part, but a white USB-C model, so that you actually have the USB-C connector. This particular drive is a couple bucks more, excuse me, the case is a couple bucks more, and it comes with a USB-C to regular USB cable. Hope you can see that. Mm-hmm. But of course, you can go to Monoprice and pick up a USB to USB-C, and then you've got an external drive with no adapters for your MacBook or your MacBook Pro if you have one of the later versions. Really affordable, super easy to get these things in and out. The performance is very good, and it lets me repurpose these drives for other things and not have them, you know, going in and out of a drive dock, which is a great option. But the thing is, I'm not going to carry a drive dock around. This way, I can carry these around, actually have them be useful to plug in and out. So Inotech drive cases, very inexpensive, very useful.
Yeah, I've there's quite a few places that do the cases for those kind of things. But the Inotech stuff, I've had one, and it they're a good quality. That's the key.
Yeah, and not expensive. It's not like you're going to invest $30 or $40 in a drive case that you really only want for secondary or tertiary use.
No, brilliant, good pick, mate. Michael, thing. I don't know if I've done this before. I mean, I've had it for a lot of years, but it struck me because I used it heavily today, and I've Jake's been doing some editing for me in the other room, and I've given him, said, no, you know, this is how to use this. This is brilliant. It's Sequence. It's a piece of software from the Mac App Store. It's not cheap. It's 20 quid. So it's not one of the lower end stuff, but it is a brilliant, brilliant app. If you like using your GoPro and you like going out and taking loads of time lapse footage or something like that, or if you've got a time lapse where it's been shot and there's problems, you get a load of problems with clouds, especially where it flickers. So the cloud passes over the sun and you get one image that's down, and then you get the next image that's up, next down, next up, that kind of stuff. Within the app, it's got a de-flicker tab that you click, and it analyzes your sequence and it levels out all of the flickers. So what you'll end up with, where you had a flickery piece of footage that would go through a normal time-lapse processor, and you'd end up with this almost something that would maybe give you epilepsy if you suffered from it. This thing gives you a nice smooth, you get some little fluctuations, but generally speaking, it does a really good job. And it also corrects for white balance as well. If you've been out and you forgot to change your white balance, or if you've got a varying white balance between the stills, that kind of stuff. It's $33.99. It's gone up in price. Okay, so it's 35 quid, not 20 quid, but it is absolutely worth the money. I bought this, and I've got it on my two machines, and you get five licenses, of course, with that because it's the Mac App Store, but it's well worth the money. It makes your time lapses look absolutely awesome. Go buy it. Can't recommend it highly enough. One glitch in it. And I wrote to the developer right at the start when I first got it. You do 2,000 images, and then when you load up the next lot of images, it crashes because it doesn't. But if you do 2,000, then turn it off and then turn it back on again, it does another 2,000 quite happily. I don't know what that's about, but I wrote to the developer and said, it does this, and he went, yeah, we know. Okay, that's that then. I've got no chance to change it. I can't think it's a design feature for any good reason, but it does work. Where can we get a hold of you, Steve?
You can get a hold of me over at appleworld.today, or I do a bit of writing over at blog.maxsales.com as well. I'm also on Twitter at the ever-popular at Stephen Sandy.
Excellent, mate. Mr. Merritt, where are you, as if people don't know?
Well, TomMerritt.com, two R's, two T's, has all of my stuff together, but you know, folks are into tech news, should check out DailyTechNewsShow.com, our daily roundup discussion of all the news of the day, plus that headline show I was mentioning that's just the headlines in about 5 minutes.
Cool. And the book. Do the book.
Oh, yes, and the book, Pilot X, if you're into sci-fi, space opera, time travel, you want to hear about a guy who just wants to fly a ship and gets caught up into events and has to save the universe, Pilot X, wherever books are sold.
And when's it coming to cinemas?
Man, I hope so. I would love that.
We would all, mate. We'd all. You'd remember your friends, I hope.
I hope, yeah, right. We'll go back to Hollywood for the premiere.
Yeah, you do seem like the kind of guy who remembers his friends. You know what I'm saying?
Some of them, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
If I don't, it's just my normal lack of memory.
Yeah. You're never too big to remember your friends. Chuck, where are you, mate?
You can find everything I'm doing at macvoices.com, interviews and everything else. Would love to have you stop over.
Mate, I found out you came, you give up your lunchtime to come on our show, and I love you for it. Thank you, man.
It's always a pleasure, Ewan. Thank you for having me.
Mate, it means so much. That's really kind. And last but by no means least, Mr. McAllister.
You can find my stuff over at screencastonline.com, where you'll get my weekly membership service for Apple video tutorials. Or you can check out an app over on the App Store, SEO Showcase, where you can get some free stuff as well, some free tutorials. But I'm on the Twitters as Don McAllister.
We say it every time, if you don't subscribe to Don McAllister's Screencasts Online and you're a Mac user, you're a fool. You don't deserve to be a Mac user. There you go. And Don takes time out from world domination to come on the podcast.
I stopped my travels to come here especially. That's right.
My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Live shows are Thursday next week because, of course, it's Good Friday, which is a working day for me. But it's a holiday for everyone else, so it should be fun. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Yes, a message for Steve. Steve, I looked up while we were doing the picks, and clawsinthecrotch.com is available.
So, from UK2. You should have said it during the UK2 ad. clawsinthecrotch.com from UK2.
I will definitely have to nab that today.
You have to buy it from UK2, though.
You got it.
Branding.
That could be the title of your next book, mate, Tom.
Yeah. A sci-fi adventure.
Yeah, yeah. Space cat claws in your crotch. That's the subtitle.
Exactly. That's all you need to do.
Space cat. Space cat X. Sequel.
Space cat: claws in your crotch.
Claws in your
crotch. Wait a minute.